You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
It's time to get holly jolly. It's our annual Christmas episode.
Ho, yes.
Ho, ho. So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we are smoking the La Cream Carame. I don't know. It's accented.
La Carame by Crowned Heads. And if we mispronounce that, don't care. Put me on the naughty list.
There are no naughty kids. Just misunderstood. Anyway, this is going to support a Connecticut broadleaf wrapper with a Ecuadorian Sumatra binder with Nicaraguan filler.
Yeah, and that Connecticut broadleaf is like super Maduro. It's like damn near black.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and this being a Maduro cigar, you know, is naturally going to have a little bit of sweetness. You know, this is a nice change of pace. You know, I'm definitely saying medium, you know, body, medium flavors, not the typical powerhouse. This is just a good quality, you know, cigar. I mean, very well constructed, too.
Yeah, that Maduro, you know, definitely gives it a little bit of sweetness, but it's, I don't know, it's got a, like, creaminess to it. It's like I said, I've had it for with my morning coffee a time or two. And like I said, it's just a kind of a smooth, it's not overpowering. It's definitely like a smooth, creamy cigar.
Do you like Bailey's?
Goddamn old Greg.
Yeah. I'm really thinking that, you know, some Bailey's, you know, with this cigar might be, I mean, I'm thinking the creaminess and the warmth of the, you know, Bailey's with the creaminess of this cigar might be onto something. Might be onto something.
Uh-huh.
I do watercolors.
God damn it. So since it is Christmas, you know, if you're going to be Santa Claus and deliver all those presents in one night, you're going to need something to keep you awake.
Yep, it's all about those efficiency ratings, baby.
Yeah, so call in the Strike Force, strikeforceenergy.com. Promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order. Santa Claus doesn't need a can. It takes up too much room in the sleigh. Just kick the can. That will keep you and your elves going all night long to get all the packages delivered. And like Santa Claus, they deliver worldwide. So wherever you're at, you can get some Strike Force.
If you try really hard enough in the comment section, you can put, can you deliver down chimney? I'm sure that, you know, you might get a some sort of a surprise.
I mean, you want those little 750 bottles, just squirt it down the chimney, put your glass in the fireplace, and...
I mean, just see a C-130, you know, dropping Strike Force tents.
Like... Damn right. In fact...
It's rain of freedom.
You know, in fact, the little shiny, you know... like, you know, little metal or whatever tin packets they come in, you know, after you use them, you can hang them on your Christmas tree and make tinsel out of them. I mean, it's dual purpose.
Absolutely. And this is going to, you know, since this will be the Christmas episode, since, you know, our schedule is just a little bit off from the Steampunk Expo that we were at, you know, we're going to go ahead and do our holiday gift guide this episode as well. So
yeah, so you still got a couple weeks to... to do your Christmas shopping.
Yeah,
there,
and
so.
You know, I was actually, you know, being that most of my friends are in, you know, cigars and stuff, I was looking on Zycar's website, and they actually had a thing that's like, you know, we will honor any delivery by Christmas as long as you order before December 16th, so.
Hells yeah. And this episode will be out before then, so.
Get on that.
All right. So with that, we'll be right back.
Get a sentimental feeling when you hear voices
ho, ho, and welcome back to the podcast.
Wow, that was almost way too jolly. Way too jolly, my friend.
Belly jiggles like a bowl full of jelly.
Jiggle, jiggle, jiggle.
"'Twas the podcast before Christmas and all through the house. Not a creature was stirring except for some cigars and shit."
Well, I mean, the bearded dragon's still awake and, you know, the tarantulas are doing their thing. It's about time for them to get active. Yeah. Home Alone had a tarantula. I thought that was cool.
So yeah, this season we're gonna, you know, we've talked about horror movies and action movies and bad Christmas movies, you know, but the holidays is sometimes a time to laugh and have a good time. So this year we're talking about our favorite Christmas comedies.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of interesting too that, you know, I mean, as some of what I would consider Christmas classics, you know, a lot of the old, you know, animated stuff or Christmas
Yeah, like all
story,
the old Franklin and Bash,
you know,
stuff.
I mean, there's a lot.
Rankin and Bash.
You know, of folks now that this is their traditional Christmas, you know, and, you know, it's kind of interesting as...
Yeah, because, you know, us as kids growing up in the 80s, it was the Christmas specials of the 50s and 60s that our parents had watched and showed us. And so for kids that were growing up in the 90s and 2000s, it's like, oh, it's the 80s shit that our parents was watching.
Yes.
Is our new Christmas tradition.
So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, the generations, you know, as, I mean, which, you know, still a lot of the classics, you know, that I would, from the 50s and 60s, you know, definitely still hold face.
Yeah, most of that stuff's on Netflix now, too, so, like, we should do a episode on the classic Christmas.
Yeah, that'll be next year.
Speaking of which, shout out to our buddy Strangeway, who I, over the weekend during the snow, he posted that he dressed up as Yukon Cornelius from the Rudolph the Reindeer,
yes.
Red-Nosed Reindeer. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, did you, you know, speaking of which, I mean, here we are, you know, not even halfway through December, and, you know, we got, I mean, I had close to 8 inches of snow on the back deck, you know, when it was all said and done.
Yeah, well, that's about what we had over the weekend. I'm like, holy crap. It's like, you know, we're here in Georgia, we rarely
get snow.
We get ice storms. At the most, you get maybe like an inch of snow, just enough to like piss you off and cover the roads. But, man, it was like a solid like 8 hours of snow.
Well, it was funny, you know, because I was watching a lot of the weather forecasts leading up to everything. And, you know, I just... You know, here in the state of Georgia, if they say there's a low chance and nothing's going to happen, that's when, you know, typically we either get the ice or we get the snow. So, you know, I kept seeing all these meteorologists downplaying, you know, the, you know, more social media meteorologists and stuff. And, you know, then you see the actual meteorologists that are on, you know, all the local television stations being like, all right, they're on to something. Like, we need to redo all the forecast. And
yeah, because, I mean... they were joking about it at work Thursday. They're like, there ain't gonna be any snow tomorrow. Everybody come in. If the weather gets bad, we'll send people home early. And then I woke up and it was like already 2 inches on the ground. I'm like, yeah, I'm working from home today because this is getting bad already. And it's like not even 8 a.m.
Yeah. You know, I mean, granted, I hit the roads. I guess it was maybe about noon. And right by my house was, I mean, you couldn't even distinguish lines in the road. And I got, you know, 2 or 3 miles up the road, and it's like, things are just wet. It's like, you know, so it was crazy, you know, just how a couple of miles really kind of made a big difference early on. And then I think as the evening progressed, pretty much everything was covered at that point. So.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, our first movie on the list, kind of going in order of release date. Some people might not consider it a Christmas movie, but, you know, it is a, it's kind of like, you know, people who don't think, there's two types of people, where people who think Lethal Weapon's a Christmas movie and people that are wrong.
Well, I mean, you could say the same for, you know, Die Hard. I mean, yeah. You know, it's definitely time to watch the fall of Nakatomi Tower.
Yeah, it's not Christmas until I see Hans Gruber fall off and be thrown off a Nakatomi
yes,
Tower.
So, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, that definitely has to be. We celebrated Rumsgiving, so, you know, it's definitely time to, you know, start putting together the plan for Rummus.
So, yeah, we're talking about 1983's Trading Places, directed by John Landis, starring Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy.
Yes. What an interesting duo. I mean, this film just works too. I don't know. I really enjoyed this film.
And it holds up too. This is one of those that like I have not seen. And
yeah, there's some others that we're going to talk about on the list that don't quite share the same luxury. Like watching as a kid or as a teenager and then watching 15 years later as an adult and you're like, what? This is not at all what I remembered.
Yeah, and even now, especially with like, you know, the, you know, argument between the rich and the not rich and, you know, the political climate we have today, is it still kind of has like, you know, some funny elements to it, even with today's time. But yeah, it's Dan Aykroyd playing Lewis Winthorpe III, a typical like rich, well-educated, you know, is a manager at a brokerage firm or something.
Yeah. And Philadelphia.
Yeah. And Eddie Murphy is Billy Ray Valentine, a street con man. The first time you see him, he's like, you know, claiming to be an injured vet. You know, he's got no legs, and then, like, the cops come and pick him up, and he stands up. And he's like
seeing him run the streets with like 40 yeah. Santas chasing him yeah. from the Salvation Army.
He's like, it's a miracle, I can walk. But yeah, like, you know, the two rich guys, the Duke brothers, played by Ralph Bellamy and Paul Gleason, you know, getting this argument of like, you know, nature versus nurture, you know, who, what really determines how, what type of person you are? Is it, you know,
yeah,
genetic or is it
social, you know, hierarchy or
your,
what?
You know, environment. So they make a bet. They're like, I bet we could take someone like, you know, rich, you know, educated man and turn him into a criminal and take a criminal and turn him into a, you know, productive rich guy. And, you know, the experiment kind of works.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I me and my, you know, fascination was studying, you know, criminals and, you know, psychology and stuff like that. You know, it's really interesting to see, you know, kind of the social experiments of, you know, early prison systems where, you know, a lot of times they were designed to, we are going to be a reformatory, not necessarily a place to, you know, just house, you know, people that have been convicted of crimes. So, you know, playing into the whole social hierarchy of things, you know, was kind of an interesting tidbit there.
Yeah, because especially Eddie Murphy's character, you know, they when he first runs into Dan Aykroyd, he bumps into him and they oh, he's robbing me. And you know, he ends up getting arrested because he's like, you know, the con man looking guy, and like, you know, the rich guy's like, oh my god, these dude must be a criminal. But when they pull him out of the jail and they're, you know, for his half of the experiment, like they provide him with like a house and a job and all this money, they basically give him Lewis's house. And at first he's like, oh, I've got free access to all these things, I'm just gonna party him and, you know, do whatever I want. But then, like, yeah, you know, he's like, starts like, you know, people are trashing my house, the people are just using me for my money, and you know, it's kind of like your responsibility. He's like, no, fuck all you people.
I mean, it's a lot like, you know, being a teenager, you know, and it's like, oh, you're the party house and all of this stuff. And then, like, you acquire things of your own that you busted your ass for. And now it's like, wait a second, I value these things. F you, you're dead weight.
Yeah. And, you know, even like, you know, is successful at Winthorpe's job, even though he knows nothing about brokerage and whatnot. And, you know, and even they even like, you know, test him and give him the opportunity to steal or go back to using drugs, and he's like, you know, turns him down because he's like, he realizes, like, you know, this is a better life. And at the same time, Dan Aykroyd's character, they frame him for a crime, they take away his friends, his house, his girlfriend, and, you know, within a matter of days he's like, you know, trying to rob people and freaking overdose.
I've got to hustle to survive. And this film definitely showcases Jamie Lee Curtis in her finest.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, when Lewis loses everything, his one friend that he meets while he's getting out of jail is a prostitute named Ophelia, played by Jamie Lee Curtis. And like I said, I've seen Halloween and all that stuff, but I have been a while since I've, seen, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis's, you know, best assets. Like, you know her now, you know, is, you know, the lady doing the freaking, what is it, the Rite Aid or whatever freaking yes. Yogurt commercials. But back in 83, damn.
It was a different time. Yeah. yes. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, this film definitely, you know, I mean, it turns into quite the feel-good story, too. I
mean, yeah, because once they find out what really happened, you know, Dan Aykroyd and you know, Eddie Murphy team up and decide to ruin the Duke's brothers and you know, with some kind of complicated insider trading scheme that I never really fully understood. But all I know is by the end, like, those guys were broken and they were rich. You know,
we should watch Wolf of Wall Street and then go back and watch this.
Yeah, it may make more sense. Oh, something about stealing an early crop report to find out whether stocks are going to go up and down because they're trading commodities. And, you know, the most ridiculous, like, freaking they go in to, like, steal this briefcase from the guy who's supposed to be delivering it to the Dukes. And Jamie Lee Curtis is dressed as, like, a Swedish mountain climber. And the butler's an Irish priest. And Eddie Murphy is, like, some, like, you know, African prince. And then, you know, Dan Aykroyd comes in as like some Jamaican dude. Yeah, because back then, you know, wearing blackface was funny. It wasn't racist back then.
It was a different time. We have since, you know, evolved and modified our outlooks as a society. Yay. It's not all doom and gloom. The robots have taught us something.
Oh, but yeah, and then the dude getting made the monkey's girlfriend was...
Yes. All around good times. Yeah. You know, like, it's... This one actually holds up quite well. And, I mean, you know, and like I said, you know, as I kind of open this segment is, you know, there's a lot of articles stating that this is, you know, one of the new classics, you know, that it should be considered, you know, one of the, you know, kind of go-to Christmas movies. Maybe yeah. Not for the younger kids.
Yeah, made for $15 million, made $90.4 million. And, yeah, for a Christmas-themed movie, came out in June for some reason.
Still a better success than, I don't know, I could take a stab at Justice League, but we're going to... Stick with my trend. Still a better success story than Battlefront 2. Hashtag fuck EA. We'll save that for another topic. People's going to get sick of what's with nerd news now? It's all about bitching about EA.
Well let's fast forward a couple years till 1988. A little remake of the Charles Dickens classic, The Christmas Carol, a.k.a. Bill Murray's Scrooged.
Yes, I absolutely love this movie, too. Like, I can't, you know, I mean, Bill Murray just does such a phenomenal job. And, you know, the other thing throughout the Christmas movies, too, I don't know if you picked up on it, but as a cigar nerd, a lot of cigar smoking throughout, you know, these films. I don't think there's a single film where somebody's not smoking a cigar. I'm like, yep, doing the holidays right.
I mean, even on the poster for Scrooged, Bill Murray's smoking a cigar and a skeleton hand is lighting it.
It's the ghost of Christmas present. Actually, I think it's just the actor from the elevator. Hey, dude, let me help you with that.
Yeah, so in this modern retelling of The Christmas Carol, directed by Richard Donner, so you see a lot of like the actors from previous Donner films. I mean, there's like if you look closely, there's like half of the cast of like Lethal Weapon
hanging out in the background. I mean, you know, come on now.
But yeah, it's Bill Murray playing Frank Cross, who's a president of ICB, some kind of, you know,
yeah, television conglomerate.
Yeah, kind of like an NBC, ABC, whatever. But he's like just completely lost the Christmas spirit, and it's all about, you know, money. And that
it's all about bad 80s action film montage things that I'm like, all right, I would probably watch those films.
Yes, because I mean, I'd forgot about it starting off with these like fake TV show movie trailers. And the one where what's his name, Austin, the $6 million man, like, saves Santa Claus, and he's, yes, like, freaking Santa and the elves are having to, like, fight off ninjas with, like, M16, and here he shows up, you know, the fall guy with a freaking, you know, minigun. He's there to save,
like,
Christmas.
Santa, you got presents to deliver. I got this.
Yes. And how, like, you know, they have their traditional Christmas commercial for, you know, 'cause they're, while Bill Murray's being visited by the three ghosts, you know, they're trying to produce a live version of the Christmas Carol. And, you know, he hates the trailer 'cause it's, like, traditional Christmas stuff. And
people don't want to see this. They want, yeah, action. They,
yeah. So yeah, he's like, you got to scare him into watching it. So he has this commercial that's, like, just looks like any 80s, like, action movie commercial. In fact, it gives an old lady a heart attack, and he's like, it's excellent. It's, like, free.
You can ask for better publicity.
Yeah.
So, come see the movie that has literally scared people to death.
Oh, it, yeah. I mean, it was, there's so much, you know, just 80s action stuff. So then, yeah, he gets visited by, you know, yeah, yeah. If anyone who's familiar with the Christmas Carol, his version of Jacob Marley, which was the guy who got him into, like, you know, the TV world, shows up and he's, like, apparently died on the golf course. So he's like a freaking rotten zombie. And he comes in, he's like, starts drinking, and he's like, freaks out, shoots him. And he's like, I don't mind you shooting me, but watch the Bacardi.
Yes.
And then a golf ball falls out of his head because there's a mouse running around. And then he tells me, you know, you're going to be visited by the three ghosts, which, you know, the ghost of Christmas past is probably one of my, he's hilarious because he's like a cigar smoking, you know, New York cabbie who, like, is just like an asshole. And just so much, like, slapstick in this movie too, where he's like, you know, he takes him to the past. And he's like, oh, we're going to your mom's house because, you know, Everybody cries and they see their mom, and he walks through the door, and of course, you know, Bill Murray tries to walk behind him and smacks his face on the door, and he's like, I love that joke.
Yes. Yeah, I think that was probably one of my my favorite renditions of the ghost.
Like, but then the ghost of Christmas Present, played by Carol Kane, who, like I said, you may remember from when we talked about Transylvania 65,000, who is, like, an abusive fairy. She just, like, beats the shit out of him.
It's like Glinda the Good Witch as a masochist.
Oh, when they go to his brother's house to, like, see what he's doing, and she, like, smacks him in the face with a toaster. He's like, bitch, hit me with a toaster.
Knock some sense into his ass.
Oh. And it's kind of cool that, like, you know, the people playing his relatives were his, like, actual relatives. So, like, you know, his brother was actually played by his brother. And, like, one of the other guests at his brother's house was, like, his other brother. And I think even, like, you know, one of his like, older brother or cousin whatever played his dad. So it was, like, they all look kind of like Bill Murray.
Yes.
Which I didn't realize that until I went back and rewatched. I'm like, wait a minute, these are, like, all the Murrays.
But, I mean, you know, I mean, it's such a, I mean, I don't know. I mean, in traditional Donner fashion, I mean, it's such an awesome film. You know, just to see the, you know, the night and day difference of, you know, Bill Murray's character, and then, you know, we can't forget, Loudermilk.
Yeah, I mean, Bobcat Goldthwait. Speaking of, like, you know, the how quickly Dan Aykroyd's character changed from rich guy to criminal. Same thing with Bobcat.
It's amazing what happens when somebody shows up with a double barrel 12 gauge.
Yeah. Because Bobcat is, like, one of the execs that he's, like, the only one, like, that tries to stand up to, like, Bill Murray and tell him, like, no, like, this stuff is wrong. You're going to frighten people and whatnot. And so he, like, fires him. And dude, like, immediately, like, loses his wife, loses his house, like, gets robbed, and, like,
I mean, hell, the dude, like, can't even get a bottle of booze. I mean, yeah. You know, you see him open the booze, and the taxi comes flying through and drowns his booze in, you know, freaking, you know, runoff from the road. And later on, I forgot what happened. Oh, the damn ghost steals the bottle out of his hand. It's like,
yeah.
Dude can't even catch a break and drown his troubles. Like,
Yeah, but then when he shows up at the end, trying to kill Bill Murray, right as he meets, like, you know, the ghost of Christmas, Christmas future, and gets the shit scared out of him, when he just comes back, like, all, like, you know, super happy and, like, freaking kissing him, and somebody's like, I came to kill this dude, but I don't know what's going on. Fuck it, I'm in. Let's do this.
It's like, I'll double your salary. You're hired back immediately, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I guess that's what happens when you're in a casket and you see yourself being burned alive. I mean,
yeah, I mean, that was straighten about, like, anybody up.
Huh. Might be one of those things for, like, you know, you've seen, like, the casket simulators at the different haunted houses and stuff. Like, have a bunch of heat so it gets really hot. And
but yeah, when he goes to the future too, yeah, like, before he even goes to the future, he's, like, visiting the set of the show they're putting on, and goes to get in the elevator, and the elevator opens up, and there's Death, and he just, like, starts freaking out, and everybody's like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, this is just the actor playing Death. This isn't actually Death.
I know who you are.
And then later on, like, Death actually shows up, and he thinks of the actor again, and he, like, opens up his robe, and there's, like, all these, like, he's like, oh, shit. But then, like, his girlfriend, or, you know, the love he lost, Claire, played by Cara Allen, anyone who's, you know, seen Indiana Jones, knows who's that is. But yeah, her transformation, when he, like, tells, like, you know, he makes fun of her because she's, like, runs, like, a homeless shelter and whatnot, and is trying to help people, and he's like, you know, before you help people, help yourself. So when he goes to the future, she's like, a rich, like, you know, bitch, and, like, he's, like, laughing at the homeless people, and then his assistant,
constantly repeating the bad advice that, you know,
yeah,
gave her.
And, you know, this version's Tiny Tim is his assistant, has a son that apparently witnessed his father being murdered and hasn't spoken in years. And so, like, you know, in the future, he's in like, a mental ward and stuff. And he's like, we have money to, like, get this kid doctors. Like, you know, what is he? You know, and, you know, finally comes back and realizes he's been a douchebag.
Yeah. It's like, oh, instead of that Christmas bonus, I gave you the towel. Like... Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, I really like that whole, you know, play on it where you're so washed up in your career that you forget that, you know, hey, there's people that care, or there's people with family and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I don't know. Like, this film really did something, like, as far as, like, you know, my idea of leadership, which I guess that's one of the reasons I like it so much.
Yeah, especially once he has the change of heart and goes and stops, like, the live production, is basically starts lecturing, I mean, America.
So candid, like,
but he does pause long enough to make out with one of the Solid Gold dancers because she's, you know, standing under the mistletoe.
Well, I mean, why not? And that was kind of funny too.
He's like, it is a law. I believe it's a federal law.
You know, when he's, you know, they're getting ready to start doing the taping, and he's got all the dancers lined up, and he's like, no, 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 we can see your nipple. People want to see your nipple. I want to see your nipple.
America wants to see your nipple. And that poor standards and practice lady who's, like, constantly getting...
just bad shit happening.
Smacked with a light and, like, freaking a building collapsed on her. She's just constantly
gets rolled over by the freaking, you know, spool of, you know, I guess...
I think it was like a barrel or something at this point.
Bad times.
But yeah, that whole lecture about, you know, enjoying life and doing what's right, I mean, that's something that people could learn from even today.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think that, you know, that's one of the reasons why I like this film, and I say it, this holds up so much better than some of the, you know, other films that we'll be talking about here in just a little bit. So, I don't know. I mean, probably my favorite take on Scrooge here, though.
And coming up next, we have 1989's Christmas Vacation.
Which is anything other than a Christmas Vacation, in my opinion. Like, that's kind of weird. Like, it's titled Christmas Vacation, but there isn't really a whole lot of reference to Christmas in this. Like, it's basically, hey, I know it's Christmas, but we're going to take this, you know, road trip to California to go to this theme park. Like,
what movie did you watch?
I don't know. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
No, that's no. Like Vacation. That's the original movie. Christmas Vacation. That's one. That's why it's called Vacation, because it's one of the Vacation series. It's when, you know, Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo decide to, they're hosting Christmas at their house this year.
That's right.
Instead of being on the road as they typically do in their movies, everyone's coming to their house. So everyone else is on Christmas Vacation.
Yes.
it's, you know, directed by Jeremy Chikaiki or something. But yeah, this movie is like one of those, you know, kind of Christmas classics, but it's, you know, I like it because, you know, if anyone who's tried to host a Christmas and make it perfect knows like the stress and the psychoticness that happens.
I would attribute Chevy Chase. I would say that, you know, trying to plan a wedding would be very similar.
You are probably right.
Just my tidbits looking from the outside in, you know. I don't know. What do I know?
I know I might be as insane as Chevy Chase by the end of this.
You were probably that insane to begin with, but you know.
True. But yeah, his like, and this movie has like, you know, so many quotes that like freaking Randy Quaid is cousin Eddie, who is like, you know, Chevy Chase's wife's like idiot like hillbilly cousin that has showed up in all the movie. He not even invited to Christmas shows up with his family and his like just beat up like Winnebago. And yeah, how many people think shitter's full? That's a classic quote.
That's probably
everyone knows.
Yeah. And the Rottweiler. I always enjoyed seeing snot.
Yeah. He's got a little bit of a you know, leg dog on you, yeah, but you know, he is a Rottweiler, so if he lays into you, it's best just to let him finish, Clark. And don't wear shorts.
You know, it's kind of funny, though. I had a Rottweiler, and that thing was, like, the sweetest dog ever. Like, I mean, it was a big baby. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, of course, like I said, he's trying to host the perfect Christmas, and everything that can goes wrong, because it's a freaking vacation movie. That's what they do. And, you know, his wife, played by Beverly D'Angelo, who was also kind of hot back in the 80s.
My, where's the time gone?
But yeah, the trying to hang Christmas lights and not trying to figure out how to, like, yeah, when you plug all that shit up that's not been plugged up in a year, and the one damn light bulb's out and the entire, you know, string doesn't work anymore, trying to figure out how to get all that shit working.
Which is, it's awesome that, you know, with the advances in technology, that's no longer a thing. Like, how long did it take to figure out, hey, we probably shouldn't wire these thing up in series? Although, hell, that's a brilliant marketing strategy, because it's like, well, shit, I don't want to go through every one, so I'll just go and buy a new strand of lights.
Fuck yeah, because like that, I mean, finally put up the tree this year, like, oh, there's like one strand that's not working. Fuck this, let's grab another strand.
Or, you know, when I was a kid growing up,
like, or the greatest new invention
to battle that.
The projector lights, where you don't actually have to hang lights.
Well, you know, in my parents, in the household and everything, they would always buy the shortest light strands possible and just connect them together. That way, if there was a short strand, you were only working with like 5 or 6 feet of lights instead of like the 25 or 50 feet.
Oh, hell. I was putting up the lights and like, you know, pre-lit tree, but like it's not like the newer trees where it's like, you know, the wires are inside the tree. It basically came with like strands of light already wrapped around it, and the middle section not working. Like the section after it's lit up, the section before it's lit up. So I go to like unhook that and replace it, and then they all come on. Like magically, like all of a sudden that center light, as soon as I'm about to like try to pull that line out, it starts working again. So it's like, yeah, it's, I'm sure there's some kind of like Christmas elf that just like laughs at all. These fuckers trying to find that one light.
I keep seeing all these posts about Elf on the Shelf again, and I'm like, man, these elves are nothing but shenanigans. Like, I couldn't have one because it would never be kid friendly.
Oh yeah, that's some of the best things to look up on, like, you know, Reddit or whatever, is the inappropriate Elf on the Shelf. I seen one where it was like an elf like with a stack of ones, and one of those like whatever Monster High dolls was like stripping for him. I also seen one where somebody just froze him in a block of ice and posted him next to a freaking Elsa doll. I was like, damn it, girl.
Hate it when this happens.
I mean, I'd rather have the trooper on a pooper instead of the elf on the shelf.
There you go. So do we want to talk about another film that, as a kid, I absolutely loved this film. As an adult, going back and watching it, you know, last week, I was like, what did I see in this?
So are we talking about 1990s Home Alone, directed
yes,
by Chris
we
Columbus?
Are.
I mean,
like, I remember as a kid watching this, and I was like, all the antics and the, you know, little traps and all of this stuff. And I was like, it was like Spy Kids before Spy Kids. And
and hugely successful. I mean, made for $18 million, made $476 million. Yeah, made Macaulay Culkin a huge star before he, like, became, like, a crackhead and disappeared from
where's from that life. Guy?
But yeah, like, this movie to me did not hold up.
No, like, I, you know, going back and watching it, I'm like, you know, first of all, there's this, you know, pretend officer standing in, you know, the doorway, and like, nobody bothers to question his credentials or anything, or, you know, even pay attention that
there's no police car parked outside.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of clues there that would be like, you either need to get the hell on or I'm going to move you the hell on.
Yes, the Wet Bandits, played by Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern as Harry and Marv, are...
Marv. Yeah. What a great, like... if I have a kid, that's how I'm going to toughen him up. Be like, Marv.
It's kind of like a boy named Sue.
Yeah.
But yeah, they, you know, their whole plan is they're, you know, going around doing like holiday checks to see who's out of claiming to be the cops and see who's going to be out of town so they can come burgle everybody while they're on Christmas vacation.
Now you just watch and see Facebook posts.
Yeah. But, you know,
we've left for 2 weeks. Well, guess who's for.
But, you know, ice storm shorts out the power, so the alarms don't go off, so everyone's in a rush to leave, and the entire family goes off to Paris for Christmas and leaves poor Kevin alone, which, you know, nowadays, you know, child services would be involved. That family would probably go to jail, but in the early 90s, it was all, like, fun and shenanigans. But, yeah.
Well, in the 90s, like, apparently nobody would believe or, you know, if a cop doesn't get a knock on the door, he just, oh, I'm going to turn around and go. Like,
ain't nobody here.
Yeah, like... I don't think that's how that plays out in real life.
Or when they call the dispatcher, like, oh, you got a child problem? Let me transfer you to, like, you know, family crisis. Well, has your child been in a fight?
Yeah.
No? Has he been abused? No, he's just home alone. All right, let me, like, send you back to the police. But, yeah, like, remembering this movie, you have all these fond memories of, like, the battle between
the shenanigans, yes.
Yeah, all the tramps and stuff and the battle between him and the bandits. But then once you go back and watch it, it's like, that's like 20 minutes of the movie. There's a whole lot of
that's
bullshit.
That's like the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, there's like a whole lot of bullshit getting up to that sequence of just him hanging out. I mean, shit I would do when I'm home alone. I mean, it's like I just watched a kid hang out, play video games, and watch dirty movies that his parents won't let him watch and order pizza and shit. I mean, I'm like, okay. I'm like, whatever, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of interesting, like, him, like, you know, keep trying to cue the TV, like, as, you know, get off the lawn.
Oh, yeah, because I remember, because that's one thing, too, I didn't realize is, like, you know, there's a gangster movie that nobody let him watch, so he watches it, you know, as soon as they leave and starts using the sound effects to, like, fool people. But it's like, I think it was called, like, Angels with Filthy Souls or something like that. But it's not a real movie. It's like, because it looks like a real movie. I'm like, I always thought this was, like, some old, like, 40s gangster film, but, like, no, that's a thing that they made just for this movie. But, yeah, it's like, I mean... This movie, there's so much, like, freaking merchandising and shit, too, because I remember playing the Home Alone video game on, it was probably Super Nintendo at the time, which was fucking impossible to, like, beat.
As all games, for the most part.
Yeah, you kids with your save spots, you know, don't know what to, and your auto-save features, don't know how it is to be able to have to beat a game on, you know, three lives. And then
I remember, well, not only that, but then you're also having to battle the, you know, just the hardware in itself. It's like, is this thing actually going to run for the duration of the game, or am I going to get to a certain point and all of a sudden it's just going to glitch and, you know, it's game over.
And in the second movie too, because he, like, you know, has a tape recorder now and is like using that to, like, you know, con people like he did in the first one with the movie recording. You know, they released a Home Alone edition freaking tape recorder.
I think I had one of those as a kid.
Oh, I might have had one too.
Like, I think I can remember that kind of being like one of the hot items. Like, you know, had the little microphone that came off of it and stuff. And
but yeah, it was a anybody a friend of MacGyver, this was like MacGyver Jr. So I mean, yeah, like I said,
in my head, that's what it was.
Yeah,
but you know, going back and rewatching it, like you said, that's only like a short snippet. Like, the rest of it is just all of the drama and...
Yeah, of his family trying to get in contact with him and him just like trying to survive because he thinks he's like wished away his family. And yeah, it's just like I said, it's that last 20 minutes of the movie is like all that I remember. The rest of it's like, damn, this takes forever to get to the like stuff I want to see.
The build-up just sucks.
Oh... I did see, like, recently, I think there's a YouTube video or something where, like, your actual, like, scientists, like, showed what would happen if you had, you know, actually used the Home Alone booby traps and how much, you know, injuries would have, it would have actually have caused. Yeah. Like, those guys would have been dead, like, three times over. And the whole, like, you know, heating element on the doorknob would have burned the house down.
Well, hell, the radiator in the damn basement, you know.
Yeah. But of course, you know, the tarantula saves the day.
Yes. As a keeper of tarantulas, I could appreciate that, you know. I was like, yes. IB Smith is going to save all.
Yeah.
It's not going to be my stockpile of what I may or may not have.
But, you know, now we kind of jump
Surprise, motherfucker!
Jump into the more modern era of Christmas comedies, when, you know, Christmas comedies started getting a little more, you know, R-rated and more adult fare. We have 2003's Bad Santa, directed by Terry Zugoff.
Zugoff!
Starring Billy Bob Thornton as Willie Stokes and Tori Cox as Marcus Skidmore. But yeah, it's all about a con man and his little sidekick who, you know, they get jobs as mall Santas and then break in and rob the mall on Christmas. You know, spend the whole time kind of casing the joint. And then, you know, his buddy is a wee person. He hides somewhere and then is able to shut the alarm off before it, you know, because anyone's ever had to...
most, like, unconventional methods ever. Like... You know, the one that really stood out that I was like, this is such a crock of shit, is like he, you know, is going to the air vents and like turns off the monitors. And I'm like, all right, the monitors are off, but all the other cameras and stuff are still recording. Like,
yeah, that didn't cut off the VCR. Well, I don't know. Then again, yeah, might have been VCR instead of freaking whatever hard drives thing.
So but even then, you would have to turn off both the TV and the VCR. Like, VCR operates independently, yeah. Usually.
But the whole, like, you know, alarm has 30 seconds before it's actually active. Because anybody who's ever set a store alarm knows it's like, you hit the button and you gotta get the fuck out of the house before the countdown goes off. So he would hide in the store and go hit the cancel button before before the alarm actually set.
You know,
set.
It goes to talk about shit security. Because, like, as security, like, wouldn't you make sure that, you know, the Santa and the elves and everything had left with all the other patrons? Like... I mean,
it's mall security. They're not, we're not talking LA SWAT here.
I mean, you know, I've never been a security consultant, but this makes me believe that I might have a shot.
They don't even have real guns.
Badges?
Don't make me blow my whistle at you. Yeah. You've seen, whatever, Paul Blart Mall Cop. I mean, it's yeah, typical. Yeah, and Billy Bob Thornton, you know, is a raging alcoholic who hates his life and really doesn't want to.
But somehow hooks up with a hot bartender. I don't understand.
Even if you see the second one, like, equally, like, for a washed up, just dirty person, like, is getting, like, the hottest girls. Something about that Santa suit, man. Everybody wants to sit in his lap.
And hell, even, you know, the damn grandma's not even questioning, hey, why is there a strange man in my house? It's just, hey, you want sandwiches? Fuck yeah, I want sandwiches.
But yeah, she's seen how this fuck. Played by, you know, the classic Loris Kleachman. And, you know, freaking Billy Bob Santa gets befriended by a weird-ass kid, Thurman Merman, played by Brett Kelly, who...
Oh, hell, not Marv. Needs to be Thurman.
Teaches him the meaning of Christmas, and he eventually, like, you know, tries to be a good man, especially when his partner decides that he's, you know...
Gonna fuck everybody over and...
Yeah, you know, try to kill him and whatnot. But, yeah, that movie has such, like, ridiculous shit goes on in it.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Yeah, the Lauren Graham as the bartender with the Santa fetish. So hilarious. And when he would like, you know, the in the whatever mall detective played by Bernie Mac is, you know, trying to find something on but, Santa,
you know. And that's the other thing is, like, I really don't think that he was. I think, you know, I mean, all the time, I think Bernie Mac was dirty. I mean, you know, I mean, you know.
Yeah, because eventually he shows, like, when he catches him, he's like, tell you what, I ain't going to stop you. Y'all just give me half your shit.
Yeah. I was like, it was Negan before there was Negan. Yeah.
And John Ritter playing, like, the weird, awkward guy who actually runs the mall. I think this was his last film, too. just him, like, trying to describe... Billy Bob's antics to the detective. He's like, he was having, you know, anal sex in the bathroom. And he's like, really? Just so uncomfortable trying to, like, speak about adult yes. topics.
Like, I don't know what to do.
Oh, but yeah, I love...
I don't know. He could have been a good 40-year-old virgin.
Yeah. But yeah, I love when Billy Bob gets... you know, he finds somebody messing around in his room, so he's got to find somewhere to hide. So he you know, had already given the kid a ride home and realized the only person there is his, like, senile grandma. So he's like, comes over, he's like, yeah, I got to stay with you for a while, kid. Mrs. Claus kicked me out. Why? She caught me fooling around with Mrs. Claus's sister.
So that's kind of, it was a little bit of a fucked up part, like, you know, where he's got, you know, about to go down on, you know, and freaking Thurman shows up and is like, oh, hi, Mrs. Claus' sister.
Like, do you want a sandwich? Yeah. Like, what the fuck, you keep trying to offer me a sandwich?
Sandwiches are for afterwards.
Yeah. He's like, just make one for her. She'll have one. And then making him a wooden pickle for trying to carve him a wooden pickle for a present. It's just
sorry, it's discolored from all the blood. It was Pickle Rick before it was Pickle Rick.
But yeah,
I mean, this film set the stage for so much of.
when he finds out that he's being bullied and tries to teach him how to fight and gets him to fight, they just end up kicking each other in the nuts. Yeah.
It's like, I want you to get really mad, you know, yell at him.
Ah! But yeah, that, I mean, and yeah, like the kid is just so, like, awkwardly weird that Billy Bob's like, are you fucking with me? He's like constantly, he's like, are you really this weird or are you just, like, screwing with me, kid? He's like, you know, I'm not Santa Claus, right? He's like, you're my Santa Claus.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, but the. I don't know. I mean, you know, toward the end of it, you know, you see, you know, him. He's like, all right, we're doing this heist, but the kid wanted, I can't remember, either the pink or the purple elephant. You know.
He wanted a pink elephant. That was the only thing he wanted for Christmas. And he's like, you know, his dad supposedly, you know, climbing mountains for the next year and a half, which they kind of allude that he's in prison as well.
Oh, they actually show him in prison or something like that at one point.
But yeah, like, you know, he, you know, he kind of, you know, even though he's like a scumbag, finally catches a heart and is like, realizes like maybe we shouldn't be doing all this. And when, you know, his partner tries to kill him, he's like, and the cops show up because he's like, you know, at one point he decides to kill himself and, you know, leaves a note for the, you know, he goes, hey kid, after I'm gone, you know, when the cops show up, like give him this note and tell him like, you know, what my elf is doing or whatnot. And he forgets because like he's trying to like die. And then he sees the kid's got like a black eye. He's like, where'd you get that? So then he goes and beats the shit out of the bullies. But like the cops show up because the kid did what he said, gave him the note. And so he's like, I don't care if I go to jail. I don't care if I die. But this kid is getting a present on Christmas and just like tries to, you know, make it home with the elephant and then just gets shot all to bits. Yeah.
Six shots to the back. But, you know, he delivers the damn elephant.
Yeah.
I mean, that's devotion.
And the kids next door that are watching are all screaming. And it's like, yeah,
you
know,
killed Santa.
Yeah, since I turned in my buddy, I'm getting off scot-free. Also, the you know, everyone agreed that the Phoenix Police Department shooting an armed Santa on Christmas was kind of fucked up. And, you know, they made a sequel last year, which was equally weird as shit because it's like, you know, 10 years later and now the weird kid is a weird 21-year-old. He looks exactly the same, except he's like 6 foot tall now. It just makes it his like weird antics like just as weird. And he works for like a, I think it's like Hungry Howie's or something. It's like a basically a fictional Subway type place making sandwiches. And he's like, well, at least you followed your dream, kid.
Why you gotta take a stab at Hungry Howie's? Why couldn't it have been Subway?
I don't know, because that's what it was, like something Hungry Howie's or something like that in the movie. Not to be confused with the pizza chain. This was like a fake Subway.
I was thinking Witch, the sandwich chain.
And they bring in Kathy Bates as Billy Bob's, like, you know, mom. And it's funny, too, because it starts off with him, like, you see him, like, in a nice suit driving a Mustang convertible, and he's like, oh, he's cleaned up his life. But then he, like, looks at some lady, like, breastfeeding on the street and, like, wrecks the car. And turns out he's just a valet. And he's, like, still just as alcoholic and washed up. And then there's, like, a whole, like, sequence of him, like, realizing his life is shit and trying to kill himself. But he's such a fuck up, he can't kill himself. He tries to, like, stick his head in the oven and then realizes it's an electric stove, so there's no gas. So then he tries to hang himself with the toaster. And toast falls out of the toaster and smacks him in the head, and the light fixture breaks that he's tied to. And, you know, his old buddy Marcus shows up and offers him one last gig. And, you know, they end up working for his mom, who's, yeah, just the interaction of her and Billy Bob Thornton's freaking hysterical. Like, it's on Netflix now. If you haven't seen it, you should definitely check that one out.
Yeah, I saw it, and I was like, well, we talked about Bad Santa, but I knew there was a sequel. I didn't know that we'd be going into it, but I'm going to do myself a favor and check that out.
Doing a quick recommendation on that one, because, like I said, it's pretty damn funny. And that brings us to our, you know, our other, you know, modern era new classic. And, you know, there's some you know, honorable mentions we didn't get to, like Elf. You know, so I'm not a huge, Will Ferrell, if he's like a co-star, but the movies that he stars in are just a little, almost like Jim Carrey. I like Jim Carrey when he's in someone else's movie, but when it's his movie, he just annoys the fuck out of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but some people love freaking Elf. So like I said, check that out. You know, you may find it funny, but we're talking about 2007's Fred Claus.
Yeah. And you know, to me, I think this, you know, I mean, I don't know. I really dug this story. I mean, this one's, you know, probably, I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe Home Alone's a little bit more kiddish or something. But this was all around probably the most of the kid-friendly, you know, topics that you could probably get away with watching as a family.
Yeah, I mean, because it's not, you know, and it starring, what's his name? Vince Vaughn. You know, those tend to be not family friendly, but it's mostly family friendly.
Yeah, I mean there were no boobs or anything, no violence. Like,
didn't make a whole lot of money. I mean, it made for $100 million, only made like $97 million. But it's one of those things. It's like it's done better on home video. It's
yes.
Because like, I mean, it's an actual a funny damn movie, and you know, it's all about, and it's.
I kind of, you know, it was interesting because the way it opens up, I mean, you think it's going to be this fantasy. It's like Lord of the Rings, but Christmas.
Yeah, because it starts off with, you know, in, I don't know, like olden times, and he is Santa Claus's.
Dude, they were at the frickin' Shire, okay?
He's Santa Claus's older brother. And, you know, and anyone who's been like the older brother and had like an annoying younger brother that you think everyone thinks he's like the best child. Thing, you know, understands why Fred hates him.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, the mom has some serious issues, like, you know, from that aspect. Like, you know, let's not even bring that into the children. Like, you know, I mean, the mom's like, you know, why can't you be more like your brother over and over and over again? Like, I mean.
And his one friend is like, you know, a bird that lives in a tree, and he has like a birdhouse for him. But his brother, being the future Santa Claus, decides to cut down the tree so they can decorate it and put it in the house, and ends up, you know, smashing the bird's house, and his one friend like flies away. But then it jumps to like jumps to now, because once, you know, his brother became a saint and became Santa Claus, apparently your whole family becomes immortal. So now it's like, you know, now times.
Yes.
and he's kind of like the brother who has done nothing and is like constantly trying to like come up with some kind of get rich quick scheme and needs money. And finally his brother's like, you know, tell you what, I'll give you the money you need to start whatever business he was trying to start.
Well, at first it was the bell money, but then it was the, well, hey, I'm really trying to get, you know, on top of this hedge, and, you know, I've got this 50,000 square foot building, and I got all these big plans, so, you know, why don't we just call it 55,000? I'll, you know, reciprocate the value, and, you know, just trying to fast talk him and be like, you know, so for.
And wasn't he trying to start like a stereo company or something?
Yeah, I don't remember what the actual business plan was, but, you know, I remember him trying to buy that retail space for something, and, you know, he's all, you know, the freaking, you know, realtor is like, look, I need, you know, the 50,000 by the 22nd. I need you to commit to this. Like, I've got people on the fence, and,
Oh, yeah, but it's like, yeah, cause it's kind of funny because I'm like, this could definitely be the prequel to Old School, because, you know, Vince Vaughn's character is like, you know, owns a chain of stereo stores at this point. So this could have been, he got the money to start his business from Fred.
Well, I mean, you know, hey, he had a change of heart. Eventually he comes around and he's like, hey, you know, I don't know. I think once he figures out that this, you know, efficiency rating person is, you know, really behind, you know, trying to screw over Nicholas, you know, that's when it really.
Yeah, because his brother agrees to give him the money as long as he will come and help him out and, like, and see what he does and work. And then, you know, he just completely freaking just almost, like, destroys everything.
Well, I mean, to his defense, though, I mean, you know, you look at it and you see. I can't remember the kid's name now, but, you know, basically you see him get taken away from his aunt or whoever. He's placed into foster care, and, you know, they've got that big orb where it's like, you know, say a name in the city and you can look down on, you know, whoever. So once he sees that kid at the top of the naughty list, you know, he looks down and it's like, no, this kid's had a hard life. Like, you know, he's a victim of circumstances, not because he's a bad kid. And, you know, that's what prompts Fred to basically mark all of the, you know, freaking kid letters as nice, which then, you know, kind of creates that debacle. So, I mean, he's doing it out of kindness.
Yeah, he's just, you know, not thinking of the logistics involved. And, of course, we get Ludacris as the elf DJ who plays all the music for the workers.
He plays one song.
But him, like, trying to, like, start a party and fighting Elf Ludacris is just.
It's like, you get locked in the cabinet. You can come out when you're done. Would you agree we can have a new song? But, yeah, that part's kind of funny. Him and, you know, freaking crowd surfing with all the elves and everything. Like.
And I like the you know, efficiency expert that's trying to ruin Christmas is played by Kevin Spacey. And, you know, Santa Claus being played by Paul Giamatti, who, dude, looks like Santa Claus. Like,
yes.
He's just, like, weird enough to, like, he's one of those guys that's, like, you know, he's a great actor, but he's just, like, you know, you see him and you're always like, yeah, even when he's playing a bad guy, you're just like, he's goofy enough that he's like, he's entertaining. Even when he's being like a violent bad dude, you're just like, I'd hang out with that dude. But yeah,
I can see us having a
beer. I think it's funny because Kevin Spacey, like, you know, he finally confesses the reason why he hates Christmas is because he never got the present that he wanted, the one thing he wanted for Christmas, because he was on the naughty list. And Santa kind of realizes by Fred's example, like, you know, maybe I should be a little more, you know, lenient on my naughty list, and gives him the present that he wanted, which was a Superman cape. You know, it's kind of funny because Kevin Spacey had just previously played Lex Luthor trying to kill Superman. The one present he wanted to make him a good boy was a Superman cape.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, when I saw that, I was like, yes, it's still better than Batman versus Superman.
True enough.
But yeah, I love to, you know, freaking Fred trying to help Willie, kind of the head elf, you know, hook up with, like, yes. Trying to give dating advice and dance lessons and everything else. And
oh, yeah. Elizabeth Banks. Is, and, oh, yeah, the, yeah, it's such a weird movie. But, I mean, it's really funny. Like, so if you haven't seen it, you need to check it out. And, of course, you know, in typical Santa Claus type movies, somehow Santa gets injured and now it's up to the kind of
it's not fuck somehow. Up brother. Shit, they have an all out, you know, brother, you know, duke out on freaking snowmobiles and everything else, and, you know, freaking crash the snowmobile into the freaking workshop, and
so Fred has to become Santa Claus for the night and see what it takes to deliver all the yeah. presents.
Like the well, I think it's funny because the efficiency person is all like, haha, I've got you in the bag, Santa's been terminated. And it's like, well, you know, the bylaw states that a clause can deliver the present. Well, you know, here's Fred. But yeah, him, you know, trying to actually, like, steer the sled with Willie's help and everything, it's just hilarious.
yeah, because, you know, Santa's sleigh's, you know, equipped with GPS and everything else. It's super high tech, but, you know, they shut down their computer goes out, and they gotta manually make it.
Yes, we've lost, you know, communication with the North Pole. We're flying blind.
But we got a map. Not like anyone knows how to read a map anymore.
It's like, well, you know, I know we're somewhere near the Grand Canyon. Just look for a big hole in the earth. But yes, yeah, it turns out to be all good, and, you know, Fred finds his love of the life, and finally, you know, takes her on the sleigh to Paris, and everybody lives happily ever after.
Yeah, getting some of those, like, family benefits of, get the yeah. sleigh for the night.
Yeah, the intervention, I was like, man, that's as bad as any intervention I can imagine going. Like, just not going to be good, man.
And speaking of, you know, Kathy Bates and Bad Santa 2, that's who's, who plays, you know, Mother Claus. You know, when there's a Santa going bad, it's yeah, Kathy Bates there to cause it. She's such a great actress too, because I mean, she does like weird, like, you know, horror movies and these big movies, and then she'll do like weird shit like Bad Santa 2 and like Fred Claus. I mean, she's always either like, you know, super dramatic or like just weird ass yeah. comedies. Like she does them all. So as we kind of wrap this up here, any final thoughts on this here, La Creme, or however, Creme, however you pronounce it?
it's pretty good. You know, I've actually really enjoyed this cigar. You know, as I get, you know, more down to the final third, a little bit of a spice has emerged from the cigar, which is, you know, as somebody that enjoys a more full cigar, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a welcome treat, but
yeah, I didn't know it's kind of like a almost like a, you know, like a smoky flavoring. Yeah,
I mean,
toward
but
the,
it,
toward
it's
the end.
Mild. I mean, yeah. You know, at no point does
it's
this,
not a KFC, but it's yeah. like it did have a little bit of a smoke to it at a certain point.
So I mean, you know, it's really good. I mean, you know, and I forgot, is it the Crown Heads La Emperosa?
Yeah, that was the one we had a couple weeks ago.
You know, that's kind of been one of my staples. Like, the more that I'm seeing Crown Heads, you know, and trying it, the more I'm really digging their cigars as a whole. You know, I mean, the construction has been phenomenal.
And each one seems to be different. I mean, there's not like a, you know, sometimes you get a couple different Vitolas, and they all kind of have, you can tell, all right, this is X brand. They all have the kind of like a certain taste to them, even though they're
like
different.
I
think theirs are like, it's about all different. Each one you try is,
I mean, for me, in that comparison, like, for me, you know, Arturo Fuente makes consistently good cigars, but most of them have, you know, a
similar
hard,
profile.
You know, profile. Whereas Crown Heads, like, the profiles are vastly different from stick to stick. And I mean, as somebody that, you know, enjoys a variety of cigars, like, it's great. I mean, I love it. So, you know, this one I would definitely recommend for somebody that's looking for, you know, something that's good. It's, you know, got a little bit of a complexity to it. So at no point do I feel bored or anything.
And it's, you know, it's a nice, like, medium cigar. So it's not overpowering. I mean, that, like I said, it's one that you can smoke any time of day and not be, like, you know, just burnt.
I mean, you know, we were kind of joking around about the, you know, old Greg thing. But, you know, you talking about, you know, having the cigar with a cup of coffee in the morning time, like, I could absolutely see that. Like, I mean, I'm dead set on, you know, maybe trying to, you know, pair this with, you know, some Baileys or something. Because
speaking of, you know, creamy, it is Christmas time. Try this with some Nog.
Interesting.
That might be an interesting pairing to try.
Yeah, I don't know, you know. And for me, eggnog is one of those things. Like, I've had some that I'm like, hey, this is good. And I've had others that is like, wow, this is bollocks.
So with that, we'll be right back. Tell them all I want for Christmas is 2 gold front teeth and 10 karat diamonds on a fat gold wreath that I can wear around my neck. Get money and respect. Tell Santa Claus to bring a $10 million check so I can spread a little cheer. Fly a couple ears, eat a little chicken, drink a couple beers, kick back and just chill like a player would do. Remix all the Christmas carols, then I'll play them for you. And now it's time for Blow and Smoke.
Season's upon us, it's that time of year. Brandy and eggnog, there's plenty of cheer. There's lights on the trees and there's wreaths to be hung. There's mischief and mayhem and songs to be sung.
And welcome back. It's a holly jolly Christmas time. And so we're going to talk about gifts for the cigar nerd in your life.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, with this gift guide, it's not going to exclusively revolve around cigars. I mean, we are the cigar nerds. There's a lot of nerdy, geeky stuff. More, you know, so within, you know, the resurgence of comic films and everything else and all the success, you know, I mean, it's almost too mainstream to be a nerd or a geek now. Like, it's like,
so... Yeah, and I would say first thing out the gate, you know, a cautionary note is, you know, if you have a cigar smoker in your life and you're not a cigar smoker, you know, your instinct may be buy that person cigars, but we're going to actually recommend you don't do that because each person's cigar flavors are different. You know, unless yes. you're, you know, have,
unless you know for a fact yeah. that person is like, oh, they love this particular cigar, then by all means. But, you know,
but if it's like, you know, your coworker that you know he smokes cigars, but you don't really know a whole lot about him, you know, go with either, you know, just about every cigar shop has gift cards, you know, so if, you know, instead of buying him a cigar, you can go get him a gift card so he can go back and him or her pick out whatever the fuck they want. Or just about every cigar shop and even some of the online retailers have they're like some like gift packs on sale right now. So you might be able to get a pack of 4 or 5 of a particular brand and, you know, odds are there might be something in that selection that they will smoke.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, for me personally, you know, instead of people buying me, you know, cigars, I've got cigars, you know, yeah. which I'm not going to knock or turn down somebody that's thoughtful and like, oh, you know, here, I got you some cigars or something. But you know, one of the other things is...
And right now, gift packs are 20% off at the start.
Shameless plug. But, you know, for me, you know, I've always enjoyed getting, you know, whether it be a punch or a cutter or, you know, even an ashtray. I mean, you know, people are like, well, I got one ashtray. That's enough. Well, you get a group of three or four people, all of a sudden that one may not necessarily be enough, you know. So you end up with a collection of, you know, six or seven.
Yeah, like I said, I've got at least like two or three. You've got like, you know, maybe four. It's like, you know, like I said, ashtray is something you know, can always do. And especially, like, you know, nowadays there's a few, there's the, you've seen pictures of it in our Instagram posts of the fancy Fuente Through Time ashtray. Well, I mean, it's a nice white ashtray with like all kind of cool artwork and pictures of the Fuentes, whatever. But for this holiday season, they've released it in, you know, the original was white, but now you can get it in red and black. So if you need to complete your Fuente set, now they have, you know, options of different colors to match your, you know, your smoking room themes.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, one of the, and in fact, I bought one just before Dragon Con, not this previous year, but the year before. But Zycar came out with something called a cigar locker. And it's really cool because it's, you know, made out of a hard-coated, I can't remember, it's not quite a plastic, but, you know, it's basically designed so that it can't be crushed. And it's got an airtight seal, so, you know, if your cigars have come out of a humidor or just from the cigar shop, it's designed to hold, like, 10 Vitola-sized cigars. It's got a space there for your lighter, your cutter.
Yeah, on top of the humidor part's like a little tray that will hold, you know, cutters, knives, lighters, whatever.
You know, I've seen people, you know, if they've got a particular key that they're trying to keep up with, you know, they'll keep them inside that locker. And then there's a separate, deeper annex to it that, you know, is good for, you know, some of the smaller Zycar, they make aluminum ashtray tins.
Yeah, it's like a little beer can looking
portable that ashtray. Or, you know, people will just kind of use that as a pocket dump area.
Yeah, throw your phone in there. The only downside of that thing is there's no like outer handle, so it's like it's the only thing. But yeah, if you've got a backpack or whatever, it's, you know, throw in your bag. But the thing about, you know, this time of year is Zycar always releases like a bunch of gift sets where it has like a lighter, cutter, you know, combo, and they have a gift pack of that cigar locker, so it comes with a lighter, a cutter, and I believe it even has one of the little ashtrays already in that if you can find. You know, find that gift pack.
Yeah, and, you know, as we're talking, you know, specifically about Zycar, I mean, one of the reasons I talk about Zycar is the fact that everything that they sell, they carry a lifetime warranty on. So, you know, a lot of folks I see, you know, will be like, well, I don't know about spending $40 on this cutter. Well, that $40 is a one-time, I look at it as an investment, because for me particularly, you know, if something happens to it, I send it back to Zycar. Most of the time, either they fix it or they'll send you a brand new replacement. But, you know, when I first got into cigars, I battled because it seemed like every time I would go to a shop, I was spending $5 or $6 on one of the cheaper plastic ones that would get lost or get broken. So, you know, over the course of a year, I was spending a lot more than I would, you know.
Oh, yeah, because I've got one of the Zycar lighter, and I think I'm on my second lighter at this point, because like I said, anytime it stops working, they just send you a new one.
Yep. And you know, the cool thing about it is I hold on to that stuff. I don't lose these cutters or these torches. Like, if they are in my pockets or whatever, I'm always cognizant. I keep up with them. Like, they become almost like a keepsake item. You know, so for me, I, you know, the quality is there. Pricing, you know, options, colors are endless. You know, as somebody that enjoys cigars, like, these are perfect gifts.
Yeah, I've got one of the old XI butterfly cutters, but then I got, last Christmas, you got me one of the new XO round hockey puck cutters. And, you know, they've come out with a whole bunch of new colors. You can get them with even the blades are like, you know, black now instead of the regular silver. And there's a lot of new colors coming out. And then there's even a couple of the, like I said, Zycar gift packs that have exclusive colors that you can't buy individually and usually comes with a matching lighter. There's one I call I forgot what it's actually called, but I call it the Stormtrooper set because it's a white and black exo cutter and a white and black lighter. So it's, you know, Star Wars fixing to come out. If you need your stormtrooper set. And, you know, and then one of the cool things I saw last year was that they had, I can't remember what, the, I think it was like Power something or another, but it was a race car themed set, which came with a keychain punch that looked like a spark plug and a matching lighter. But you couldn't get those, because I didn't want to, because the lighter it came with it was almost too big for a pocket lighter. It was definitely a desktop lighter. But I like the spark plugs, and now they've released the spark plugs as a solo album. You can get it in like a white or a red this year. So if you want just the spark plug to put on your keychain, so even if you leave your lighter in your bag or whatnot, you've always got a, or your cutter, you've always got a cutter on you.
Yep.
And you know, the they've also come out with a new V cut. If you like your V cut cutters, they've got some new ones now that are spring loaded like the XO, and it gives you a deeper cut than the previous Zycar wedge cutters. So like that's I've seen that a couple people picking that up and seem to really enjoy it.
Yeah, I ran across a website, you know, and they were selling something called the cigar bore that I thought was really cool. And basically what they did is they took either a 308 or 7.62, or you could get it in 223 or 5.56. You know, it's almost a replica bullet casing. And, you know, you would use that as the punch for the end of the cigar. Well, then it also had a firing pin mechanism that inserted into that shell. So the little bit of, you know, plug tobacco there, you would just push down on the firing pin to free up the plug.
Yeah, and it also has like a keychain connection hooked to the firing pin. So, again, another punch you can put on your keychain.
You know, so whether you're into guns and cigars, you know, I mean,
Yeah, I kind of want one of those, because I remember I was reading a book at the that happened to be at the cigar shop one time. I think it was actually called Cigars for Dummies, and it was kind of older, and it was talking about punches, and it was saying like some of the original punch companies, that's what they did. They were made out of shell casing. Some of the before they, you know, that was like some of the original punches you could get. And I've like always wanted to find one of those bullet, you know, old school bullet punches, and now this company's making, you know, brand new versions. I did see, if you go to their website, they're a little more expensive, but there's a couple like different,
and there's different companies too that make it.
Yeah,
so
there, I can't remember now, but there was like there was one like a cigar website, and it might have even been Cigar Dojo or one of those, but they had come up with a deal with this, so they were selling them a lot cheaper than you could get it straight from the manufacturer. So Google around, you might be able to find a deal on those. But then there's, you know, we've talked about the cigar accessories, but then there's also like, you know, other like, you know, non cigar related stuff you can get. Like, for example, like, you know, pretty much just about every cigar smoker I know likes to pair them with, you know, various alcoholic beverages, whether like we do beer or whiskeys. And I found a company called Prestige Decanters that make really awesome, like artistic whiskey decanters. Like, they have one that looks like a ship in a bottle with a little glass like pirate ship inside of it. They even have some that look like the old school rotating globes with like a little biplane or a little ship in the center of it. And it even comes on like a globe stand. So it looks like a globe, but it's actually, you know, a clear glass whiskey decanter. And they had a couple other different weird designs that were pretty badass.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so kind of the possibilities there are, you know, relatively limitless. You know, I mean, like I said, I feel like oftentimes I see people get too wrapped up in, you know, the cigar and not necessarily all the different things to go along with the cigar. And, you know, your point to the decanter is, you know, that's a great gift for, you know, even couples, you know, whether it be, you know, I mean, all right, so what? I don't smoke cigars, but I'm big into wine. So, you know, decanters and stuff like that are absolutely great and, you know, fitting for, you know, really just any, you know, group of people.
Yeah, I've seen even, like, there's a couple sets even on Amazon where you get the decanter with, like, whiskey glasses and stones all in a set if you want to go in on some package deal. But yeah, you can never go wrong with like, you know, a cool whiskey glass or, you know, a decanter or whatnot. Got any other holiday suggestions there, Brad?
I mean, well, I don't know. I mean, it's really, it kind of depends, you know. I mean, as cigar nerds, nerd culture obviously, you know, surrounds all the things that we do, you know, when we're talking about pop culture and everything. You know, if you're, you know somebody is a fan of a particular franchise or something, there is a pop figure for just about everything. And, you know, that is a dangerous, dangerous slope.
I've tried to avoid them because everyone I know that collects them is like, once you get one, you have to have them all.
Yes. It's almost like Pokemon.
But they have an A-team version, so you can get a Hannibal smoking a little cigar or even I think there's even like a freaking Hellboy has a cigar.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, for me, I always try to kind of, you know, think about stuff that people can get, you know, more so than just a, you know, the downside to a cigar is once it's smoked, it's done, you know, and accessories, tangible things like what we've talked about, you know, these are things that people are going to cherish. They're going to carry for years. You know, it's not just going to be something that, hey, I'm going to, you know, have a memorable smoke, but then, you know, it's gone. So, I don't know. Just my thoughts and my recommendations just based on, you know, folks that I see that are unsure what to get, you know, the aficionado in their lives.
And another one that I've come across that and I believe you've got one of these in the past is the Man Crates. It's a company that makes these like pre-made like gift boxes that they come in like a little wood crate that you actually have to pry the top off with. It even comes with like a little crowbar, but they have different themed.
You have to be a man to be able to open a crate. Like it's designed that, you know, not just I was almost embarrassed at the amount of effort it took to get into the thing. Like,
but they have like several different themed ones. There's ones that come with like, you know, engraved beer glasses and coasters. There's some that come with like different, there's like a meat box that comes with different beef jerkies and different exotic. There's ones that even come with like, you know, if someone's a craftsman, there's ones that have like make your own knife kits and whatever. But they even have if you don't want to get the full box, they have ammo cans too. And they have a cigar-themed man crate ammo can box that comes with an actual metal airproof ammo can that has been turned into a humidor. So you get the humidor ammo can. It also comes with a looks like a Zycar cutter, a lighter, and a little cigar journal. So if you're someone who likes to, you know, take notes and you know make your little tasting journals, it comes with a tasting journal for you to use. But yeah. Those ammo can humidors make a pretty badass travel humidor. Yeah, it's a steel ammo can, so it's not gonna break on you.
You know, and speaking of humidors, I know humidors are they're a great gift option. One of the things I do recommend is, you know, getting, you know, either the small containers of the PG gel or something, because the, you know, little, you know, brass colored, you know, floral foam filled
if you buy a humidor, the first thing you want to replace is the hydrometer
just
and
don't
the
cut
humidifier
it.
Part. Because most of those are just like the cheapest thing.
And then, you know, the other aspect of it is something that I've become very fond of is, you know, we do a lot of smoking here in the Nerd Cave. Well, you know, not everybody enjoys the fragrance of, cigars. So once we're wrapped up smoking, is getting, you know, the smoke eliminator, sprays. You get them in a combination of different scents.
And they even make, you know, candles or whatnot that you can burn while you're, you know, smoking that keeps the smell down.
And even, you know, even people I know that smoke cigarettes now have started to buy it, and they will use it in their cars and stuff like that. So when people get in, the car doesn't reek of cigarettes, you know. So, you know, I mean, a few different options there.
Yeah, there's you some shopping options for this holiday. And like I said, if you order, you know, within the next week, you should be able to get it by Christmas. If you've got your Amazon Prime, which you can buy through the link on the ESO podcast website, help out the network and whatnot. And with that, we'll be right back.
Okay, let's talk about the Flopcast.
Where every week we drink a lot of coffee and we talk about comic books,
movies,
conventions,
music,
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, don't forget the coffee.
Lots of weird, obscure pop culture stuff from the 70s and 80s.
And chickens. Yeah, chickens.
This will be the stupidest half hour of your week.
We guarantee it.
You can find us on the ESO Network.
And Flopcast.net.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome for Nerd News.
Woohoo!
So we'll go ahead and jump into the mix now. We got a new trailer for, or actually the first official trailer for Ready Player One, and this is based on Ernest Cline's novel Ready Player One. And you know, if you haven't heard us talk about, you know, this film yet, I mean, the book is absolutely amazing just for the 80s nostalgia factor and everything else.
Yeah, if the trailer's to be believed, sweet 80s soundtrack.
Yes. You know, so actually seeing things start coming to fruition and little tidbits of the film, like, it just got me super amped up.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, one of the things we discussed when they said they were going to make this movie is, like, how are they going to get the licensing to all the different properties that are involved? But we're always like, Spielberg can throw money at the problem or just his reputation at it. And, like I said, the first teaser trailer had so many like Easter eggs and stuff in it, and the new one has even more. So it's like, yeah, there's apparently no problem getting the rights to all these things for this movie. Like, there's, an epic battle scene with like giant robots in the book, and I'm like, are they gonna do that? But you see a freaking Gundam, like freaking
yes.
Gundam wing, and they're like, I guess they're going there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I've seen where, you know, Spielberg has come out and said, yes, there are things cinematically that are going to be different than the book. I mean, anytime there is a, you know, movie adaptation of a book, you know that there's going to be some things that are just going to be changed. So, you know, I've seen... Yeah.
Just
you know,
the scale of the book is hard yes. to do in, like, even a two-hour movie. So,
you know, and the other thing, too, is I think, you know, the book, you know, is... You know, outside of the Oasis, you know, gritty and slummy and, you know, not exactly, you know, the most appealing, you know, type of place. So, you know, I mean, as far as the characters and the casting and the images, you know, are going to be different than the way that people perceive them from the books because, you know, people don't necessarily, I think, want to see that on,
and
you know, a
you
big
see,
screen.
Like, you know, the real world versus the Oasis in the trailers. Like, the stuff in the Oasis just looks amazing. And, you know, the stuff in the real world is...
I mean, it's basically Junkyard Wars.
But, I mean, they show the stacks, which was, like, the big, like,
yes.
multi-level trailer part. And it, I mean, it looks exactly like the cover of the book. I mean, it looks amazing.
So, I don't know. I mean, the more that I see, the more that, you know, I'm excited for this film.
And it comes out the day after my birthday. So,
there
Mark,
you go.
We finally got, we hadn't had a release date before.
Belated, you know, yeah. birthday present.
Comes out
March
30th, 2018. So, we finally got a release date on that.
Which,
I can't wait.
You know, I mean, there's still, I don't know if that's a hard date or if, you know, that's what they're aiming for. As of right now, that's a release date. If that should change, we'll keep folks updated. Another film that, you know, took me by surprise. I knew that it was coming, but I didn't quite know the direction that they were going with is we've got our first full trailer look at Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And, you know, where the last film left off, it seemed like they were trying to weaponize the dinos and stuff. Now it seems like they've realized that, crap, if we don't take these things out, they're going to take us out.
Yeah, because from the way the kind of the side story of the last one where the Engine Corp was trying to, you know, make, you know, weapon dinosaurs, that's what I expected out of this movie. It was going to be some kind of like...
SWAT Raptors.
Yeah, dinosaurs in, you know, Afghanistan type movie. But from the looks of it, you know, apparently they built Jurassic Park on a volcanic island, and now the volcano's going to erupt, and they've got to go in and save all the animals.
Was it a volcano erupting?
Yeah,
or,
it was
you
like,
know,
because like in the
In my head, I thought that they were, you know, this company was going to try to wipe out the dinos.
No, it's like a volcano, and they're there on like a rescue mission trying to preserve as much of, you know, the dinosaurs as they can. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of a bad place to build a theme park, is on a volcano. Shit happens.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, looking at the trailer, you really feel bad for the dinos. But you know what? I mean,
Blue's back. T-Rex is back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do got to give, you know, props to Chris Pratt's character and everything. I mean, it looks like legit this is going to be a, you know, very much, you know, save the animals campaign, you know, from,
you know, because these movies always, you know, kind of been man versus nature, and this one looks like it's going to be nature versus nature. And yeah, because,
well,
it's,
I mean,
it's,
I
like
think
a,
that
it's a disaster movie wrapped up in a Jurassic Park movie.
I think that, you know, our nemesis is going to be there to try to, you know, keep Chris Pratt and, you know, all the other, you know, cohorts off of the main mission and just let nature take its course, more so than,
or trying to capture the dinosaurs for eventual weaponization. Because, you know, you see Jeff Goldblum's back, and you see him test frying in front of, like, looks like, you know, a court or Congress or something like that.
I was in a T-Rex's mouth.
But if it reminds me of a lot,
how did he survive?
Of was it Jurassic Park: The Lost World, the last movie he was in, where it was, you know, him going there, or was it Lost World? Or it was the second Jurassic Park movie, but he goes to, like,
yeah, that's
the
Lost
island
World.
to basically, like, document the dinosaurs and whatnot. But then this other team shows up and are trying to, like, capture the dinosaurs to, you know, zoos or sell them some kind of property. You know, there's, like, so it's like, you know, the people there are trying to protect the dinosaurs,
you know,
but the people trying to
on cargo ships
poach the dinosaurs or whatnot. So it looks kind of like
we're going to get mini Jurassic Park.
Yeah, so it looks kind of like we're getting like a little bit of a remake of The Lost World.
Godzilla, not Jurassic Park. This is Jurassic Park. Yep. Words. English. I'll learn it one day.
T-Rex will be like, fuck you. The last time y'all took me off this island, I ended up in like L.A. and whatnot. Yeah. You're not taking me off my island again, man. I've been there before. It sucks.
But it's like almost like an all-you-can-eat buffet.
And of course, SWAT Raptors are back.
Yep.
You're my boy, Blue.
Up next is a you know, film based off of a very popular manga, but we got Alita: Battle Angel. And, you know, with this one here, I haven't read the manga, so
yeah, I wasn't familiar with this, but it kind of looks like they did the live action adaptation of Ghost in the Shell earlier.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of people, you know, making comments that you guys didn't learn from Ghost in the Shell, like, and, you know, there's the big uproar with this is, you know, every manga anime, the characters have the over-exaggerated big eyes. Well, they've digitized this and, you know, brought it into the real world, and people's like, no, we don't like it in the real world. It's better left for the, you know, the mangas. And,
I kind of like that detail. It kind of makes it a little bit more,
well, I mean,
anime-esque.
That's the thing is, you know, I think it does a good job in showing she isn't human.
Yeah.
Like, you know, why, you know, if something isn't human, do we want it to look as human as possible? Like, you know, and in my head, that kind of defeats the purpose. So, you know, maybe because I haven't read the manga and I'm not a hardcore, you know, follower of this and don't know all the details, that, you know, I just don't understand where the, you know, the fan base is. But, you know, I think a lot of times people will just shit on something for the sake of shitting on it, you know. We can't like it. We got to find something to not like.
Damn snowflakes.
But yeah, this movie is slated to release January 20th of 2018. So this will be one of our, you know, summer blockbusters. Up next is, yeah, a little, you know, we got Star Wars coming up, obviously. So I guess, you know, to, you know, balance out the Force.
Fucking porgs, man.
I guess we'll talk about, you know, Star Trek. And apparently Quentin Tarantino and J.J. Abrams are working on a R-rated Star Trek. So I don't know what that means. I mean, does it mean that the fucking bridge is, you know, done for? Or, I mean, you know, I'm not quite sure how this plays out in my head.
But, I mean, Tarantino. I mean, there's something like freaking Star Trek supposed to be all like, you know, hope and positivity. We don't need an R-rated, but something new. I mean, the last three Star Trek movies I've liked, and they've turned them more into action films, because like the original stuff was like hit or miss. I mean, some of them were just boring as fuck.
Well, I mean, I can I will be the first to say that, you know, Star Trek for me, watching the originals and everything else, is a sleep fest for me. I cannot get into it to save my life. But like you said, with the, you know, newer films bringing some action and everything, it's actually captivated me and brought me into this Star Trek, you know, universe. And like, all right, I can get into this a little bit now.
But with Quentin Tarantino, we may get Samuel Jackson in Star Trek. I just want to see him. Hand me my phaser. It's the one that says bad motherfucker. Oh, or, you know, freaking, yeah, just as weird as it might be, I kind of want to see Tarantino's take on, you know, he's been doing a lot of old Westerns. That's the one thing I don't think he's ever tackled is sci-fi. So it's kind of be interesting to see him playing from a filmmaking perspective, seeing him play in a different universe than the ones he's tackled beforehand. So, I mean, I'll have an open mind on this one and see how it goes.
We're going to get somebody with a sweet machine gun lug.
Oh, and yeah, if nothing else, it's going to be entertaining. It's going to be weird.
Yeah, so I don't know. Or we could see Tarantino go in a direction we've never seen Tarantino go before, and like I said, I don't know how I feel about it.
But I've also seen some rumors, too, that Sir Patrick Stewart has said if Tarantino's doing this, he would be willing to come back as Jean-Luc Picard and and be in this, make an appearance in another Star Trek movie.
What does Picard look like? Does he look like a bitch?
Yes. Or this could be the one where, you know, they kind of rebooted the universe and went back to the the old Star Trek. You know, this may be one where they fix the timeline and go back to the original original timeline, or somehow end up in the future.
Yeah. So I mean, I just don't know. You know, but
make it so, number one.
I mean, these are fun conversations to have about what could be. Up next, so we had, you know, the Punisher series wrap up. Absolutely phenomenal. Loved it. Netflix is back on the map with the trailer they released for Jessica Jones in her second season. So,
yeah, I'd almost forgot about.
I mean, that's the thing, right?
Like, because, you know, everyone else, you know, and we got the Defender series, and yeah, I kind of forgot about Jessica Jones being on the horizon. But this one looks kind of like they're going back and taking up where her series left off and going more into, you know, with her first season, there wasn't a whole lot about her origins and whatnot. And it looks like, you know, in this one, they're kind of investigating where she came from and how she became who she is and kind of delving into that, that backstory.
Yeah. And I mean, that's been the great thing. I mean, I've enjoyed Luke Cage, Jessica Jones. Iron Fist was a little bit harder for me to get into, you know, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, after I got into, you know, just a few episodes of Jessica Jones, like her character really, really grew on me.
Yeah, it was kind of like a Detective Noir series with superpowers.
Yes.
I did see a meme, though, because there's been the meme going around of T'Challa, the Black Panther from the Infinity War trailer, going, you know, get this man a shield. And then it's like, it's had the Iron Fist, like, I'm the immortal Iron Fist. It's like, get this man another catchphrase. Yes.
So, I don't know. You know, this one's kind of interesting because this one happens 2 days before my birthday, as long as, you know, the dates don't change. So, you know, March 8th of 2018 is hopefully when we'll see Jessica Jones back, you know, in Netflix. Up next is Suicide Squad 2 is set to start filming in fall of 2018. Still a better movie than Batman vs. Superman. Felt like we already used that one, but it still stands true. So, you know, apparently, you know, with the new time frame. Apparently, they were trying to start filming 6 months prior, but Will Smith had other engagements. So, you know, with this happening, I think it's set for October. This allows Will Smith to be done with his other obligations and everything.
I hope it's Bad Boys 3.
But it won't be.
Oh. Speaking of, have you seen the and it should be coming out within the next, I think it comes out the 22nd, his Netflix movie? Crap, I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's like in a world where magic is real, so there's like orcs and fairies and all this other stuff, he's like an LA street cop and his partner is an orc, and they have to deal with like some kind of weird supernatural like crime and shit. It looks like Bad Boys meets a Lord of the Rings.
So it's going to be like Warhammer.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, the trailer actually looks pretty insane, but it's like a Netflix original, supposed to be coming out this month.
I think I remember seeing that. All the details aren't fresh in my head, but I'll have to look into that again, because I don't know. I mean, I like a lot of the orcs, and you know, which I'm a fan of Lord of the Rings. I know you can't necessarily get into that type of shit, so you know, I mean, that's where we differ. But you know, I like some of the fantasy elements there. So who knows? You know?
Yeah, I mean, because it looks like you know a regular like police drama, but I mean, or like a police action movie, but it just it's called Bright, but it just has like you know magic elements in it. I mean, it kind of looks like what is it? Fucking End of Watch. I think it might even be by the same like people that did that, but yeah, there's monsters.
And you know, and as we kind of wrap up here, you know, this whole Disney and Fox acquisition that you know is being talked about and being worked on. You know, I've seen a lot of people, you know, out there posting on what happens when, you know, Disney acquires Fox and what that does as far as, you know, the powerhouses and everything that be. I mean, I think Fox owns like, I don't know, I want to say it was like 40% of stakes. Disney, you know, has like
Fantastic Four, X-Men, Deadpool. Yeah, if nothing else, maybe we'll finally get a good Fantastic Four movie. If they start incorporating them into the MCU.
I was wondering, you know, maybe this is, you know, a way to start getting more X-Men worked into the cinematic universe.
Yeah, a lot of the current Avengers and whatnot, their contracts are up after Avengers 4. And a lot of them say they're, you know, getting too old for the shit rigs. So this could be a way to, like, you know, continue the MCU and the Avengers by bringing in, you know, X-Men, Fantastic, you know, different new characters to fill in the gaps of some of the people that'll be leaving. And even, you know, Wolverine, he has said that, you know, even though he's done playing Wolverine, if, you know, if they want Wolverine in the MCU, he'd be willing to pick up the claws again and just to play in the Avengers world.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, you know, I mean, and one side of me says, yes, it would be great to see, you know, these additional properties come together. The other side of me, you know, what does that do for creativity? You know, granted, I know there's a lot of folks that'll shit on Disney, you know, or really any big studio, you know, but does this hurt, you know, competition, you know, and, you know,
that started like a little bit like a monopoly.
I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, you know, with
next they'll buy freaking DC and we want to get a good Justice
League
movie.
Well, I mean, you know, we know that Disney is, you know, most of their content is on Hulu and that type of thing. I think they own something like 40% stakes in Hulu.
Yeah, they're starting their own, digital service in the next couple of years. So, who knows? If nothing else, you know, from the non-Marvel stuff that Disney will acquire if this trade goes through, they also get the Aliens franchise. So that means the Xenomorph will officially be a Disney princess. Because, you know, the Alien Queen, that means the Xenomorphs are Disney princesses now.
Let you can do it like go.
Do a whole nother cross for Avengers versus Aliens.
Well, I mean,
are the fucking Guardians of the Galaxy end up running across the fucking Xenomorphs, man?
There you go.
They could definitely do some like weird shit.
So I don't know. You know, I mean, you know, it kind of sucks as you know somebody that's there to pitch new ideas, and you've got less studios to go to and pitch said ideas. You know, but on the flip side is. we get a lot more, a much bigger sandbox to play in. Yeah.
And so, Marvel gets the rights back to most of their characters. As you bring it all back home. Yeah. I mean, even technically they don't have Spider-Man, but, you know, they're letting them play with Spider-Man. So pretty much they've got just about every known, you know, movie hero out there, you know, back in one stable if this goes through.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, outside of that, fuck EA, and you know, it looks like they've got, you know, a lot of people shitting all over them. Last I saw was Battlefront 2 has only sold about 20% of what Battlefront 1 did. So, you know, and there's been a lot more talks of legislation and stuff with the, you know, random generalized loot crates and monetized values and everything. So, you know, they've definitely created a stink. So, you know, good job to the people that, you know, have stood their ground and, you know, told EA to F off.
Ah, and with that, only other, you know, news items I've seen there. We know we're getting Daniel Craig back for one more Bond movie, and they've announced a director. It's supposed to be Christopher Nolan of the last good Batman trilogy. He's going to be directing James Bond, so that's going to be interesting. And also, Ernest, you know, no time on release date, but with the Ready Player One movie coming out, I saw something just kind of pop up today that Ernest Cline is saying he's writing a sequel to Ready Player One.
So awesome.
Be interested to read that whenever it comes out. So with that, you can follow what we do on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, Instagram, Facebook, at CigarNerdPod. We're also on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. You know, speaking of Christmas gifts, you know, StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code CigarNerds. Also, you can get cool smoking shirts, not just the Cigar Nerd shirts, but all kind of other ones at RealMenSmokeCigars.com. And, you know, there's even a link to our Zazzle store on our website. So with that, just remember, shitter's full. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.